One more time. Going afar upon the mountain, bringing the wonder back again into the fold of my Redeemer, Jesus the Lamb. Resist once in my life singing that into a microphone. Thank you. I was so excited about that, I think I left my sermon back there. Let's see, where is it? This is the morning sermon, so that must be the evening, you see? There we go. Okay, isn't this a great night to be a child of God? Man, this is just fantastic to look forward to getting together and fellowshipping and encouraging each other and building each other up. And tonight, our topic is old people, the future of the church. Actually, I talk for a living, and so I know better than to title it that, so it's titled Older People, the Future of the Church. Okay. Just prior to the launch of the space shuttle Discovery, on October the 29th of 1998, it launched seven crew members, and one of them was John Glenn, who was 77 years old. John Glenn had been in space before. Matter of fact, I remember back in 1962, all of us being gathered around the radio in its school as John Glenn went up into space to become the first American to orbit the Earth. To put it into perspective, the first time John Glenn orbited the Earth, the key political figures in the world were Nikita Khrushchev and John F. Kennedy. So that kind of puts it back to the time. And so a few days before the flight, John scolded 100 reporters gathered at the launch pad and the crews during the crew's rehearsal for a countdown. He told them they were focused too much on his age, and he said rather than the mission's scientific merits, which is what they should have been focusing on. And why all the fuss about his age? Well, as a Time magazine piece began, quote, "This is no country for old men." Yeah, that's the attitude in our country today. That sentiment seems to reflect the attitude in our culture. Hit the age of 65 and you're done. It's out the door and it's all over with. I was thinking today that from time to time someone will ask me, how long did it take you to prepare that sermon? And I thought today, the next time someone asks, I'm going to tell them in all seriousness about 40 years. This series that I've preached on the family, I could not have preached at any time in my ministry up until now. And it's a combination of just so many factors that take place. This November, I'll turn 65, and the elders will know when it's time for me to go. And I will agree with them 100% when anybody asks, I will tell them it's my idea, because when they think it's time for me to go, it will be my idea to go. And the last thing in the world I would ever want to do is to stay beyond the time when I'm doing what the Lord wants me to do. And our elders are better qualified to make that judgment than I am, because I don't have to listen to this stuff. You do. It's sort of like the class where the teacher was saying one morning, she was with her class and she was talking about good works and trying to impress on them the fact that you couldn't earn your way to heaven with good works. And so to drive home the point, she asked the class, if I sold my house and my car and had a big garage sale and gave all my money to the church, would I go to heaven? And the five-year-old, no. And if I cleaned the church every day and mowed the yard and kept everything neat and tidy, would I go to heaven? And all the five-year-olds, no. Well, she continued, then, how could I get to heaven? And in the back of the room, one five-year-old boy answered, you got to be dead. So, Well, for those of you that are young people that are here tonight, I have some bad news for you. You only have two options. Someday you are going to get old. You only have two options, either to get old or not to get old. And you need to think about that second option before you start criticizing the idea of being old. Today I want to talk about age. This morning we talked about this same passage, Titus chapter 2, in verses 1 through 5. But let's look at them again, because we skipped over what it said to the older men in the congregation. Titus was writing to a preacher who was preaching to a group of congregations. And this preacher really had his hands full. Look at verse 10 of chapter 1 to get the feeling for it. Beginning in verse 10. For there are many who are insubordinate, empty talkers, and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision party. They must be silenced, since they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not to teach. One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. I mean, that's one of their own poets saying that. This testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of men who turn away from the truth. To the pure, all things are pure, but to defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But both their minds and their consciences are defiled. They profess to know God, but they deny Him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, unfit for any good work. But you, and the emphatic word in the original language in this verse that's hard to bring out, it's as if he had bolded, capitalized, and underlined the word you in the original language. But you teach what accords with sound doctrine. Sound doctrine, the word sound here is the Greek word for health. Well, we use the word sound that way sometimes. I, John Doe, being of sound mind and sound body, do, etc., etc. And here's referring to health. Healthy teaching. Teaching that makes for a healthy spirit, and even secondarily, it makes for a healthy body. And so he says, you have got to teach. And notice he gives a whole list of people that he's to teach. First, he's to teach the older men. Then he's to teach the older women. And then he's to teach the younger women through the modeling and the teaching of the older women. And then the younger men, and then even the slaves, and so forth. But out of all of these groups, notice that first he starts with the older men, and then the older women. We have it backwards in the church today. Today we live in a culture that worships at the altar of youth. For example, one of the most watched programs on national television is 60 Minutes. But 60 Minutes is not able to charge as much for its advertising time, even though it's one of the most watched programs, is programs that are watched by far fewer people in the demographic of, what is it? I forget the exact ages, like, is it 19 through whatever the age is? The bottom line is, well, actually, it's the teenagers and the 20-somethings. And so the advertisers are willing to spend great gobs of money advertising to teenagers and 20-somethings. But they're not willing to spend as much money on the seniors, even though a program like 60 Minutes has a much larger viewership. Why is it? Because they know the seniors are more experienced and less likely to be bamboozled by slick advertising. In every walk of life, we look to the example of the elders in the movement. And yet in the church, what we're hearing in some sectors is, well, we have to do what the young people want, or they might leave. Could you imagine the athletic director at U of M going to the coach and saying, you know, what it's really all about is we need to ask these football players what they want to do. We need to ask the quarterback what kind of quarterback he wants to be, and what kind of defensive stuff they want to have. Now, Brady Hoke was a good football player in high school, but they're paying him to be a coach, and they're not paying him to ask the young people, well, what do you want to do with our team this week? because Brady Hoke has the wisdom and the experience of years of age in order to decide and understand not what the young football players want, but what they need. And when Paul saw churches in trouble in Corinth, in Crete, he didn't say to Titus, you know what you need to do is find out what the young people want. If they want a praise team, get it. If they want drama, get it. If they want shorter sermons, get it. You know, if they want women preaching, get it. You know, instead of asking what do the young people want, the young people need to be taught what they need from God's word by those with experience. And that's why in every case when there's trouble, Paul begins with not the younger ones, but the older ones. Paul, when he spoke for what he thought was going to be the last time to the Ephesian, to the brethren in Ephesus, he was in a hurry. He didn't have time to get to Ephesus, so he stopped at Miletus, and he called for a handful of people from Ephesus, and he warned them that wolves and false teachers were going to enter in, not sparing the flock. But who did he call to warn and to give instruction on how to deal with it? He didn't call the youth minister. He didn't call the teen group. He called the elders of the church. He didn't even call the preacher. He called the elders of the church because they're the ones with the wisdom and the age and the experience to set the tone and the tenor. And so in this passage, in a like figure, Paul is saying, man, these people in Crete, they're about as bad as they come. So Titus, instead of being like them, you need to teach, and you need to start by teaching the older men. You know, we need to really value older people. Now, let me define what I mean by older people. In those days, according to one ancient author, Hippocratic, the guy that did the Hippocratic Oath, he defined old age as the sixth and seventh periods of a person's life. Hippocrates, that's it. And also then Philo said that old meant 60 for both men and women. And so that would be retirement age to us. And it bothers me in the church. You know, I've known people, and you've seen people who work at the work that somewhere around 60 or 62, they retired. They just didn't tell the paymaster. You know what I mean? It's like they lost the fire in the belly and the excitement of going to work, and they just didn't really care or not. They just showed up so they get their paycheck at the end of the week. Well, it's time to retire if you get that way. But you know, I was just reading an interview with one of the most famous preachers in America, Charles Stanley. The man is 80 years old and preaching for one of the largest churches in America, and just published his latest book. He's the third best known preacher in America. Behind Billy Graham and Charles Swindoll is Charles Stanley, is the third most best known. He's published several dozen books and just published his latest one at the age of 80. I couldn't believe it. I just dumbfounded. 80 years old. Frankly, I kind of hope the elders would say, it's time for you to retire somewhere before 80. It's between them and the Lord. It really is. But the fact of the matter is, we don't retire from the Lord when we turn 80. What we do transitions when we turn 80. One of the interesting things that happens at old age, our character tends to magnify whatever qualities we had been nurturing early on. Our habits and behaviors become more pronounced as we grow old. If we tend to get angry, old people get grouchy. If we tend to be shy, sometimes we become somewhat reclusive when we become older. And so the Bible teaches us the first thing here. He says, older men are to be sober-minded. Now, the King James, the first two qualities listed in the King James are sober and grave. And to me, that's stern and grouchy. Sober and grave. But that's not really what the words meant in 1611 when the translation was made. What does he mean by these words? Well, sober is translated in the New International as temperate. And what it means is a lifestyle that's not prone to excess or rash swings of mood and action. It means someone who looks in the pool and makes sure there's water in it before he jumps. And old age tends to magnify our characteristics. If on the one hand we tend to be serious and we measure things before we jump and consider the long-term consequences, we're going to do that in our old age. But if we're erratic and man, you never know what's coming next. It's going to get worse as we get older. So being sober means to be balanced in our personality and personal habits. We avoid the extremes in our moods and in our behavior. And similarly, the word that's translated grave in the King James means to take life seriously. It doesn't mean that you don't joke, or you don't laugh, or you don't have fun, but it means you don't turn everything into a joke. That you take the serious things seriously and understand there's a season for everything. Self-controlled or temperate describes a man that keeps his passions under control. You know, it's no accident that many of the Bible characters failed in the second half of their lives. Have you ever thought of that? Noah got drunk, David committed adultery, and Solomon flirted with pagan idolatry and all kinds of bad, sad things. Warren Wiersbe said this. He said, as we grow older, we're confronted with the temptations that we've shunned in youth, but that now look very attractive, cutting corners, eliminating disciplines, lowering standards. Paul says to Titus, tell the older men in the congregation that they're to maintain control over their lives. And here's where they're to maintain it, in three areas. Notice, older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound and healthy in what? Faith, love, and perseverance. It would be sad to give up after running 90% of the race, wouldn't it? Can you imagine anything more frustrating than doing all the training and paying the price and 90% of the way through the race deciding, I'm tired, I'm going to quit. Or it hurts, I'm going to quit. And so older Christians need to understand that you have this responsibility to set the example. And as older Christians, you need to stay in touch with the younger Christians so that you can be there to set an example and to counsel them. It's important, for example, it's been a long time since we've had a child in our home on a daily basis. And so what helps me in preparing sermons, and I'm working now on one for the children, but what helps me is I have a number of parents that give me feedback about the challenges they're facing right now. And the time that I spend with some of those younger people, it helps me to understand what are the challenges they're facing. Things that I had forgotten about that were constant struggles when we had a son at home or foster children at home. Young, older people, don't shut yourself off with other older people. Get to know some of the really young people, you know, like maybe some of the guys in their 30s. And seriously, get to know some of the kids. Take the time to get to know the little guys' names. Play with them. And so forth. Now, we live in a different age now, so if you're going to give them candy, check with mom and make sure it's sugar-free, you know. It's a different world. I remember when there used to be somebody at church I would run to because he always had candy for me. When I first moved here, I used to keep a huge container of candy on my desk. And the kids would come to church and they'd make a beeline for my office. And that was there for a purpose, not to give them candy. But every one of them that ran into my office, I had a chance for interaction with them and to remember who it was. Older people, you are the model for them. Someone has compared older people and younger people in a church to fire. You take a fire, you need fire. And where the real fire is with the youth, right? That's where the real energy is. But the problem is that fire can be constructive or it can be destructive. Fire can warm a home or it can blow up the house. And it's the wisdom of the older people in the congregation that's able to channel that fire without putting it out so that it's constructive. The real energy comes from the youth. So many times, for example, I notice that our young people go off to Christian college and they come back and they've been talking to their friends and they've got this idea and you think, yeah, we had the same idea when we were in Christian college and now I know the answer to that. And there are things like they sit around, they decide, just to give you an example of what I mean. Often I'll hear someone that just sits off as a freshman or a sophomore at a Christian college. You know, we've been thinking about this and we think that it would be cool if we just took the Lord's Supper every day. I mean, after all, they met from house to house and broke bread. And then you have to open it up and explain to them that that breaking bread was eating a meal. And it was going on house to house, not as they worshipped. And this is just novel and great to them. And then it takes the wisdom of age to say that. to explain those kinds of things to them. There are unique challenges that youth are facing today. Probably one of the primary challenges is that everything's okay and nothing's wrong. There's truth in everything, and there's truth on all sides. And how can you know that your truth is more than another person's truth? One of the unique challenges that you're going to face with young people today is when you teach to them that the Bible says there's one Lord, one faith, one body. When you teach that, that flies against everything they've been taught in school in their daily life, that you're supposed to accept and approve of everything and disapprove of nothing. And so our young people are going to want to wander off and drift off into churches where the band is the best, or the drama is the best, or the projections are the greatest. And we have to tell them, we have to care about them enough to say, look, this is what the Bible teaches. And all of these isms come and go, but the Lord's church has been here for 2,000 years. I remember when Antiism raised its head and was growing like crazy. It's dying now. The Lord's church is still here. I remember when the Boston or the Crossroads movement, and it just exploded and mushroomed. It's gone, and we're still here. I remember an elder one time telling me they had something like 20 buses. If a church doesn't have a bus, Joy Bus ministry, those elders are going to hell because they don't love lost souls. The Joy Bus ministry is not here anymore, but the gospel of Jesus Christ and the church is still here. But the young people want to see women in the pulpit. Well, all that comes and goes. The irony of it is the denominations that have endorsed women as preachers are dying super fast. You start giving people what they want, they're going to find somewhere down this road that'll give them even more of what they want. And so we have to be the ones that teach our young people and stabilize their faith and say to them, look, we've been there. We've seen that. This is what worked 2,000 years ago and 100 years ago and 50 years ago. And it will still be here when we're gone. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. Older Christians are to model what the next generation needs to become. Paul emphasizes the role of women in teaching in upcoming generations more than he actually does the women. Titus, as a man, was to work more closely with the men, and it was more appropriate that the older women mentor the younger men. In 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, Paul said to Timothy, "And what you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." God calls older Christians to pursue the kind of behavior that matches sound, healthy doctrine. In this way, they display the kind of lifestyle that younger Christians need to pursue. The role of the older Christian is to model what God wants the next generation to become. And that's what this text suggests. Now, you may be wondering, you're probably sitting back there saying, "The preacher, I'm not sure if I'm old or not." Well, I'm glad you asked. You know you're old when the pimples go right to wrinkles. You know you're getting old when most of your dreams are reruns. You know you're getting old when the airline attendant offers you coffee, tea, or milk of magnesia. You know you're getting old when you sit down in a rocking chair and you can't get it started. You know you're getting old when your mind makes commitments your body just can't keep. You know you're getting old when the little gray-haired lady you just helped across the street is your wife. Ouch. Not as long as I can afford the beautician. Ooh, am I in trouble now? You know you're getting old when you read The Total Woman and it makes you sleepy. You know you're getting old when everything hurts and what doesn't hurt doesn't work. You know you're getting old when you sink your teeth into a juicy steak and they stay there. You know you're getting old when you watch a pretty girl go by and the pacemaker makes the garage door open. And so if any of those qualify for you, then this sermon applies to you today. And if the sermon doesn't apply to you today, remember, because someday it will, unless the Lord calls you home early. Am I right? Older Christians have to, and here's my final point, older Christians have to continue to learn. This is Titus saying, teach the older men. Teach the older women. It's never too late to learn. To assume the role of modeling for God for the next generation means you need to absolutely continue to teach. And Howard Hendrickson describes an elderly woman whose motto was, "Let's not bore each other with each other. Let's get into a discussion, and if we can't find anything to discuss, then let's get into an argument." She died at 86 years old after drafting a list of her goals for the next 10 years. Now, that's kind of the way to go, is with that attitude. You know, it's really sad that we have allowed concerns for what the younger generation wants to guide us. These are not the people that need to be making our decisions in the church. After all, that generation, the older generation, is not the generation who took the melody out of music, or the pride out of appearance, or the courtesy out of driving, or the romance out of love, or the commitment out of marriage, or the responsibility out of parenthood, or the togetherness out of family, the learning out of education, the service out of patriotism, the golden rule out of rules, the nativity scene out of the cities, civility out of behavior, the refinement out of language, the dedication out of employment, the prudence out of spending, and the ambition out of achievement, or God out of government and school. So we're looking to that generation to tell us what the church needs to be? I don't think so. And if the younger generation does lead the church off in the wrong direction, it will be because the older generation has not set the example that needs to be set. We live in a culture where we're more concerned with whether our children like us than we are with whether our children are liked by the Lord. And we need to get back to setting the example and setting the standard. Because how can the generation that has spent 30 or 40 or 50 years studying God's Word come to someone who's been a Christian for a year and say, we need to ask you what needs to be done? No. It needs to be the other way around. And so as we talk about modern family God's way, one of the things that has to be included is that in the modern family, there are older people that need to be revered for their wisdom and the model they have. If you're subject to the invitation, come now while we stand and sing.